This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations we want to have. The conversations we need to have.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Do you think that paying hackers is just the cost of doing business these days to protect your privacy? Have you accepted that? How much of your money is being paid as ransom? Will you ever know? There are reports over the past couple of hours that Origin has coughed up a ransom in this case over the past couple of days of the data hacking. The alleged hacker says they won't leak any more customer data from Origin Energy, saying it's quote unquote settled everything privately. I personally haven't seen any response yet from Origin. The Australian government's advice to companies is definitely don't pay up. But what choice do companies have, and what do you believe is now the normal? The companies have cyber insurance policies, and the hackers know that there are those costs of those premiums. Where does that fall? Does it fall on you? And do you think that that is just the price we have to pay for privacy? We're going to be talking about the cost of coughing up. There are restrictions around what a company can do and pay in this circumstance. But I'm asking you, do you accept that your money is going towards hackers if that protects your privacy, as this hacker has reportedly claimed that that ransom worked? Is that just the new normal? Also today on The Conversation Hour, tell me about the fall that defined your life. If you're one of the many Australians who's had a fall, a wag on text has said a defining point in the ageing process is when you no longer just fall over, you have a fall. Well, we're talking about that today. What are you doing to reduce your risk of falling? Do you know that you should start working on it in your 30s? I didn't, and I didn't work on it. I am now, of course, like many of us. A US study just recently has found that one fall, just one single fall, can define how you'll age. Tell me about the fall that has defined your future years. Tell me how you are preventing that. And that's, of course, if you are lucky enough to survive. In Australia, about one person over 65 is admitted to hospital every 4 minutes due to a fall. That's admitted to hospital. 17 older people die as a direct result of those falls every single day in Australia. So tell me about the falls you've had, what you wished you'd known, and we're going to be talking about what you could be doing right now as you're listening to this to prevent that, to lay the vital groundwork to be fall resistant. Also today, talking of feeling old, did you learn ancient Greek or Latin? What use has that been to you? I'm calling out to the scholars of those ancient languages as the last secondary school in Victoria looks set to bury ancient Greek after almost 150 years. That's coming up in the Conversation Hour. Tell me about the falls in your life and what you are doing to prevent it. And next, tell me, do you believe that paying ransoms is just the new normal? What is the cost of coughing up to data hackers?
This is The Conversation Hour with Mary Guerin.
So as I said, it's just in the past couple of hours that there's been reporting that the hackers, alleged hackers in the Origin Energy data breach, have said they won't proceed with their threat because they've come to a private arrangement. Just how common is this? Troy Hunt is cybersecurity expert with Have I Been Pwned and joins me to explain the situation. Hi, Troy.
Good morning.
How is this just normal? And how much of it is happening, this paying of ransoms?
Look, it's increasingly normal, and it's sort of changed a little bit because we've had ransomware as a concept since all the way back in even the early 90s. It was ransomware before we had the internet. But ransomware then became a process where someone's computer would get infected because they'd open an attachment to an email or a prompt on a website, and everything would get encrypted, and then the hackers would demand money in order to decrypt your files. But very recently, it's pivoted to hackers finding vulnerabilities in systems, taking data, and then saying, if you want us to permanently delete your data, pay us the money. If you don't, we'll will dump it publicly. And that's become a very, very popular criminal enterprise, particularly in recent years, and well beyond the traditional scope of ransomware, which used to be very Eastern European. Now it's very, very mainstream.
So in other words, you're saying they're doing it for the ransom alone, not necessarily to even use the data?
Yeah, correct. Well, the data is, I guess, the commodity which is being held ransom unless the money is paid. We have also seen incidents where organisations haven't paid the money and the criminals have gone, well, okay, we can't get the money that way. We'll just start going through the individual victims because you've potentially got millions of individual people there with personal information. And there's been some really noteworthy precedents where hackers have just literally emailed whoever's in this data breach and said, give us money or we'll dump your data.
You're listening to Troy Hunt. We're talking about ransoms, whether companies are paying them, even though the Australian government advises them not to. Do you think that this is just the price of existing today and having a little bit of privacy? Tell me what you think. Troy, as I was saying, the Australian government strongly advises, I think is their language, for companies not to pay these ransoms. There are various laws. It's not illegal. There are some guardrails around what Australian companies can do in terms of reporting what they're doing and going to, you know, sanctioned environments and so forth. But is this a nod and a wink from the government? I mean, how much of it is really within the Australian government's control?
Look, I think it's more a recognition that there can be extenuating circumstances where if an organisation doesn't pay the ransom, the impact of that may be greater than, I guess, the broader societal damage if they do pay the ransom. Because, of course, the concern we have is that when you pay the criminals, you just incentivise more criminals. If we just banned it outright and no one paid, well, then the criminals would go, okay, well, we're not going to get the money. But there's enough, I guess, holes in the circumstances for organisations to sometimes pay. Just last month, we had a very significant incident that impacted Australia as well from a company called Instructure that does a learning management system for schools. They create a product called Canvas. And they very publicly got ransomed by a group that had been doing a lot of this. And eventually they ended up paying the ransom in order to suppress a huge volume of data about children, including children's messages to their teachers. And that was just sort of one of these cases where it's like, look, that data is potentially volatile enough that it could be really, really, really damaging. And they inevitably rolled the dice on paying the ransom, accepting the pinking promise from the criminals that they would delete the data and hoping that that was the best outcome.
Pinky promise. Yeah, of course, in this circumstance, why wouldn't you ask for that? That seems to go to Judith's question on text here, Toby. How do we know that even if a ransom is paid, that the information isn't kept and sold on anyway?
Oh, it's easy. You don't.
You don't.
You have absolutely no guarantee. And of course, this is the counter argument. And we do have precedents of organisations paying the ransom and then later on discovering the data hadn't been deleted and is then publicised further. Now, interestingly, in the case of things like the Instructure case I just mentioned, hackers will provide, I'm air quoting this here for listeners, proof that yes, the data has been deleted. I think the term they used was something to the effect of shred logs, but it is digital data. It's a little bit like saying, look, I deleted that photo off my phone and it's gone forever. Yeah, but you sent it to someone else first or someone else took a photo of the photo on your phone. Like, there are lots of ways of digital data propagating.
We're talking about the latest data breach. It involves Origin Energy. Tell me if this has affected you and what you're thinking at the moment, and also whether you think, look, these ransoms are just going to be part of our lives. And how much do they flow on to us? 1300 222 774. Toby, just hold on the line there. Chris from Richmond has called in. What did you want to say, Chris?
Yeah, the new anti-money laundering laws that came in on the 1st of July that now apply to all sorts of things other than just banking. So it applies to real estate transactions, etc. We're in the process of selling my father's property because he's moving into aged care. And I was sent a link, well, at first, I had no warning that this was coming, and it was from one of the agencies that the real estate agents had employed to do these AML and money laundering checks. But it just came through with like an anonymous, you know, click here. And at the same time as the government's bringing in, you know, these anti-money laundering laws, they're also bringing, you know, putting ads on TV, don't be fooled by scams. And this is just a perfect opportunity for someone to send a link through to someone.
Exactly.
Oh, click here, provide your passport.
What'd you do, Chris?
Well, I actually sent it back to the agent and I said, this has got red flags all over it. If I was harvesting information, this is how I'd do it. And I ended up, I think I got an actual link then from the company that had the actual URL in it rather than just some anonymized thing. And so, you know.
Do you think that was dodgy, that first one? Did they say it was?
No, I don't think it was. I just think it's, you know, this was just after July 1. I think there's all sorts of teething problems with it. I think it's one of these things that's been rushed through and, you know, you've got all, like anything, I mean, if government's going to do this, they should run it themselves, not provide it out to third parties. That, you know, there's all, you know, I've had three different transactions with three different companies now, and it's just all these different people, and who's providing protection for the data once you send it to them?
Chris, that's really interesting. Troy, these changes of what can come through to our phones, have you been able to assess that?
So the changes are going to give us better visibility as to the identity of the sender. And I think the issue that the caller's just raised here is a really important one to touch on, which is our ability to do identity verification and establish trust online is extraordinarily hard. I mean, if it's an IRL, in real lifestyle engagement, like you walk into the real estate agent and then you see the agent and you have that immediate recognition and ability to verify who their identity is. When you receive things digitally, whether it's an email or an SMS, we really don't have a good way of doing that now. Mm. Now, when we do get these sender IDs in a much more reliable fashion, that will be great. So when we get an email or an SMS rather from a verified identity, we can say, all right, well, that was NAB for argument's sake. That's fine, but the problem is the gaps, because we're still going to be having so much communication from entities who don't have any sort of verified sender ID, and it will be legitimate. And a lot of the problem we have now is not just trying to spot the scams, but also trying to establish when we get legitimate communication, which has all of the hallmarks of a scam, because organisations keep doing that.
So as Chris points out, there's all the during this teething period, basically we have to double check everything.
Yeah, and we will have to afterwards as well. It will not solve the problem in any sort of complete way.
Yeah. Troy, again, if you can hold on the line. Oh, actually, I think that call has disappeared. I did want to ask, just on the question of ransoms, how much is being passed on to us as customers, as shareholders, as taxpayers?
Look, it's a good question. I think maybe if we work backwards and think about how much is actually being paid in ransoms, we'll start to have a bit of an idea of the impact on us as customers. And this is part of what the legislation last year imposed, where you do have to now report ransom payments to ASD, our Australian Signals Directorate. So at least we can start to get some way to quantifying it. But look, I know in the case of things like the Instructure example I gave before, it was multiple millions of US dollars paid in ransoms for just that one incident. And it is one of a very large number worldwide. So inevitably, it is taking a lot of money out of the pockets, ultimately, the consumers, certainly not the organisations that are wearing all of this themselves, that they will factor that in. And as you said before, it factors into things like cyber insurance as well. Mm.
One last question on text to finish on, Troy. This, if you do receive a threat from someone that, saying they've gained their information, where do you go? Do you go to the police?
Yeah, look, it's definitely then a criminal incident as soon as you have a data breach, which of course is what all of these things begin with, and then once there's extortion as well. So that is absolutely something that you need to refer probably through to the AFP here in Australia and onwards from there. It unfortunately does become a very serious legal issue then. Mm.
Troy Hunt, thank you so much for guiding us through this today. You're in sharp demand because this is unfortunately a growth business, but hopefully we can get you on again.
Yeah, no worries.
Troy Hunt is cybersecurity expert with Have I Been Pwned? And yeah, a lot of thoughts coming through on text saying just check everything. You're on The Conversation Hour. We are also talking today about falls. Yes, not just falling over, the capital F falls that do change our lives. How do we prevent them? When do you start? Do you know you're supposed to start in your 30s? Yvonne from Hyatt, have you had a fall that went on to define a little bit of your life?
Well, not really, because over the last 30 years I've had about 25 falls, and I've had five this year. I fall upstairs, downstairs, over the footpath, in the garden, in the house,
dear.
Or, you know, down the ramp. I mean, I'm really great at falling.
I'm sorry to laugh if I'm, but now I'm thinking of you as like, you know.
I'm like a rubber ball. I keep bouncing back up again.
That's
right,
a stunt woman who's just sort of, you know, pushing the envelope. But go on, Yvonne, what's that meaning for you in your life?
Well, I did do balance classes about 2 years ago. It was I did 18 sessions of balance classes, and I try and do them, keep them up. Because, well, this is, I mean, sometimes I go for 2 years without falls, and that's great. But this year I've had five, and three of them are pretty, you know, bruising and stuff like that. And
Are you given advice as to how to prevent them? Is it a particular issue that's leading to this?
Well, I think with me, it's to do with my leg. I don't suffer from vertigo or anything like that. I don't have dizzy spells. It's to do with my leg. I don't lift it up properly. And if there's a little bit of a bump or a little thing hanging up, I'll just, you know, boom, I'm down. So, the only good thing with me is that I've got good bones, because I mean, I've had a really bad one where my head got all bruised and bleeding and stuff.
Oh,
apparently
goodness.
I should have gone to the doctors, but didn't realize you should have.
And, you know, go to the doctors, please.
Well, if it happens again that bad, but you know, you get bruised and shaken up, and I don't know the answer to it. It's just things that happen to me, and you know, but like I said, having good bones, otherwise I'd be in and out of hospital or something.
Right. Yvonne, thank you. And please keep listening, because a bit later on in the conversation hour, we're going to be talking to someone from the Fall Prevention Society of Australia and New Zealand. So we will be looking into what we can do to prevent this as well, what you should be doing. Definitely go to the doctors if you are falling and hitting your head. Mel in Heathcote, tell me about your experience with falls or preventing them.
Well, with me, when I turned 60, well, I'm 62 now, I fell over five times in the 1 year.
Oh, what was that about?
And just in the garden was the first one, and lucky I was already kneeling, getting up from kneeling and then fell over again.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't hurt myself. The first four were sort of just clumsy, just feeling like I was clumsy. And the fifth one, I was just walking along, my foot just gripped the ground. There was completely flat ground, and I went over, and I'm sure I cracked a rib because I was in so much pain.
Oh, my goodness.
But being stubborn like Vaughn, didn't go to the doctor.
Can I just pause here to Yvonne and Mel and everyone who's had falls? Please
exactly.
Go see your doctors. They like to see you, especially if you've had a fall.
It seemed like the number five thing, but then there was a local gym. I'm in Heathcote, and it's a small country town.
Mm-hmm.
But Nikki, one of our local residents, opened up a gym, and I joined, and I haven't looked back.
You feel different? I'm an evangelist for the gym,
so.
Mel. I agree.
It's they got over 60s classes as well, and it's just core strength. And I realised that's what was wrong. You know, you stumble, but you've got no core strength to stop yourself.
Yep, that's
so
right.
You just keep,
and
you,
that and that improvement comes quickly, doesn't it, Mel?
I was surprised. I was really surprised. Yep. I mean, I haven't fallen since.
Wow, that's great.
I'm 62 now, and it's just fantastic. And it's not all about becoming a twiggy, going to the gym. It's not all about getting skinny. It's all about just improving your balance in, living longer.
And living longer, it's not about being a twiggy. Mel, I love that call, and I am completely in agreement. As I say, please stick around and also call 1300 222 774, any questions you've got about preventing falls. We will be talking about the things to look out for, but also prevention. It's all about that. I'm with Mel as well in the gym. I want to hear more about it. Also, I want to hear from you. If you're already texting in, if you learned ancient Greek or Latin, what use is it to you? What use is it to anyone today? Ancient Greek is being phased out of Victorian schools. I'd love to hear from you. What use has it been in your life? Why should the young people know anything about it? Coming up next, we'll look at what's happening in the Middle East. There's a new threat. What does it mean for us at the Bowser?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Well, you might just be keeping in intermittent touch with what's happening in the Middle East. No one could blame you. It seems to be on and off again all the time. But one of the threats that we've been talking about for quite some time, the Houthi group of terrorists, of rebels who are who work alongside, who are affiliated with Iran, ramping up the threat on the other side of the Arabian Peninsula when it comes to blocking oil supply. So what do we need to know back here? And when might we see the effects of that at all? Kevin Morrison is Energy Finance Analyst with the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis. Kevin, thank you so much for joining me today.
Pleasure, Mary. Thank you for having me on the show.
How, I know we've been, people in the know have been saying, oh, if the Houthis get involved, if they go through with these threats, that's going to exponentially raise the impact on the rest of the world with fuel. How significant is what we've seen so far and also the potential threat from the Houthis?
It is significant. And just to spell that out, while the Strait of Hormuz is the main outlet for oil to come out of the Middle East, the Red Sea option and this Bab el-Mandeb Strait is not only a backup option, but it's also a very key link between Middle East, Europe, and Asia, because you know, if you travel south to go through this Bab el-Mandeb Strait, that's the southern route. But if you go north, you have to go through the Suez Canal. So it's a very important trading link in you know, the movement not just of oil but other goods as well.
I know we've bandied about that the Strait of Hormuz controls about 20% of the world's supply. If the Red Sea were involved as well, do we have a stat about then what total amount of the supply is affected?
Yeah, well, look, when the strait was when the Strait of Hormuz was open, I mean, that was roughly around 20 million barrels. So that's roughly about 20% of global oil supplies. Saudi Arabia sent most of their oil out through the Strait of Hormuz. But then when the conflict happened, they've got a pipeline that goes right across their country, so they can then send their crude to the west to the Yanbu port, which is on the Red Sea, and then they could send it out to the Asia Pacific through.
So there are ways around that.
Well, yes, but now that looks like it's been closed off. So roughly, Saudi Arabia was able to transfer about 2/3 of the volumes that they usually sent through the Strait of Hormuz, but when that was cut off, so 2/3 of that supply went through the Red Sea. Now that is looks like it could be cut off. But I was just reading reports this morning that the Houthis actually allowed some Saudi vessels to go through that were destined to China. So there seems to be some sort of favoritism. So there is some vessels getting through that strait, but obviously it's impacting the majority. Now, just to add another layer of complexity to this, as I said, it was is a key link from Europe to the Middle East and into Asia. There's actually oil that flows down south through the Suez, and that comes from Russia.
Right.
And that all goes to India, and that's that supplies a lot of India's demand. Mm. And also India is a big refiner, and Australia actually buys some of its oil products from India.
Right. So indirectly, yeah, we may get some that can squeeze past this potential other pinch point. But I guess for people who are listening and, you know, not going to be conferring with the globe and geopolitics and so forth, are you able to say roundabout if this is going to have an effect on our fuel prices? Or is that just such a complex question, given the interplay of those other factors, that we just simply do not know?
No, I think it will have a bearing, because not only have we seen this, but there's been some other factors as well that would all, you know, and together they would all add up to a tighter market.
Mm.
So just explaining what the scenarios are at the moment with this potential threat from the Houthis. So if Saudi Arabia can only send their oil northwards through the Suez, given that the Suez Canal is very narrow, it's only 200 metres, so you can't really send big volumes of ships through there. And there's also a pipeline that actually goes on beside the Suez Canal.
Mm.
And so theoretically, that could take about half of what Saudi Arabia's normal exports, oil exports are.
Right.
But it's never really done anywhere near that. It's only done about a third of its theoretical capacity.
So it could be inevitable that it will squeeze our supply. In what sort of time frame do you think, Kevin? Sorry to press you on things that is hard to know.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, globally, it will be immediate. But the thing is, because Australia is pretty much at the end of the supply chain, because this oil normally goes to refineries in Asia. So let's say if it went to Singapore, because Singapore is important to Australia because we buy about a quarter of all our oil products from Singapore. So Saudi Arabia supplies Singapore with its oil. Now, normally, directly, it would just take about 3 weeks. But if it was to go north and then through the Suez Canal and then through the Mediterranean and then all the way around Africa, that's going to add another 4 weeks. So that's going to cost a lot more because, just the fuel costs alone, but also the insurance costs as well.
So, we're looking at something inevitably coming down the track within about 4 weeks. You believe?
Well, actually, we've seen price rises immediately. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because, take petrol, for instance, that did fall back to about 180, and now in some places it's retailing for over $2 a litre. And diesel, that's remained above 2 litres.
Mm.
And that's another thing we should... I know that we get obsessed, it's always quoted the Brent crude price, but more importantly for Australia, given that we import 90% of all our fuel requirements, and that's normally in refined product, you know, not just in the crude oil form. So we should be looking at the price of products.
Absolutely.
And diesel. That is over $140 a barrel.
Mm, and so, yeah, so we're already seeing the effect. Yeah. Kevin, thank you so much for helping us understand that today.
Pleasure. Thanks, Mary.
Kevin Morrison is Energy Finance Analyst with the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis. We are seeing the effects already, keeping an eye on that complex situation overseas. You're on The Conversation Hour on 774 Melbourne and Victoria. Later on, we are going to be talking about preventing falls, how to start early, what we should be doing. Also, very, very soon, we're going to be talking about ancient Greek, Latin. Are they useful at all? Robert from Balnarring Beach. You did ancient Greek, did you?
Yes. So I did French to year 10, Latin to year 11, and Greek to year 12.
And has it been of any use, Robert?
Well, those
Is
two
that
languages,
the right question I mean, to French, ask?
French being a representative of the Romantic languages, Spanish, French, Italian, and the other two provide the basis of so many words in English. It does help you to understand your own language, but it was a completely different time. I'm 77, and then most people who did year 12 turned 17 in year 12, not 18, because of the way it was structured. And therefore, it was not unusual to do 2 years year 12, and you turned 18 in the second year.
All right.
And,
so, Robert...
And therefore, you could do a whole range of subjects. So I did 10 year 12 subjects.
Yeah, very different now, Robert. So we're going to be asking the question, Xavier College looks like it's the only secondary college that has been offering ancient Greek. It has signalled it will stop after 150 years. So that's gone from Victoria. Yep. These days are different, do you think, Robert? Do you think that's fair enough we drop ancient Greek now?
Well, it's a pity,
pretty much everyone has.
It's completely different. The kids turn 18 during year 12. They're not going to stick around for another year.
So you think that in a crowded schedule, Ancient Creek just doesn't punch its weight?
Correct.
Yeah. Robert, thank you. Really interesting to hear. As you say, it was a very different world once when Ancient Greek was common. But why would we fight for ancient languages to be in our schools now? Gaetana Pellegrini is Assistant Lecturer of Classics and Archaeology at Melbourne University and has been looking at this particular issue. Thank you so much for joining me, Gaetana. Hello. Gaetana, I think we've got you on the line. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I can hear you now. Yes. Well, you just heard Robert there saying it was once when he was doing it, very different world. Why should Ancient Greek continue at Xavier, which we're singling out only because it has signalled it will suspend this, at least for now? Why should we be caring about this?
Well, because there is a momentum, because the number of students at university is more than double.
We went doing Ancient Greek, you're saying?
Ancient Greek, correct. Right. Going from an average of 9 out of 10 students to 26 students because these are the feedback that I receive from my students, because students have this strong desire for depth that Ancient Greek provides, and because, well, there is Hollywood telling us that our society, our zeitgeist, is thirst for something deep. Yes. The Odyssey, of course, I'm referring to that.
Exactly. We're just on a recent show, Gaetana, we were speaking to a Homeric scholar who is loving Odyssey, and I'm sure there are intellectuals and academics just celebrating Christopher Nolan as we speak for that. But you're talking about a doubling of number of students at Melbourne University, so who come out of our high school system and say, actually, I really want to learn ancient Greek. You talk about going back to basics. Can you expand on that? What does learning an ancient, well, effectively dead language, I know it was the ancient forebearer to the modern Greek, but essentially what does it give a student, a young person?
Well, many things, and I would summarize and then I can explain a bit better with this. It gives that very good equilibrium balance between the logos, which is the intellectual, the rational, which is what you need when you basically translate a language like Ancient Greek, but also a very high appreciation of beauty and aesthetic, because translation changes according to time. For the Christopher Nolan movie, the translation of Emily Wilson has been used, 2017. So is this constant reflection of what the society wants. Not just that, a very new, fresh perspective on the language we speak. I'll give you an example. And when I share this with my students, they look at me with this very strong desire of and happiness, basically. So words such as crisis. So words such as a crisis in our society have a very bad rep. You are in the middle of a crisis, something negative, and so on. However, crisis comes from the ancient Greek verb krino. Krino means to judge, to decide. So when you're in the middle of a crisis, means that you have many options. So it's the time to sit down and think, reflect. But also words such as problem. Again, very bad rep, very, very rep to the point that we're trying to avoid using the noun problem, and we replace it very often with challenge. However, problem comes from the ancient Greek proballo, which means to throw ahead, which means that you need to foresee, the capacity of planning, strategizing, which again are qualities that we see in Odysseus. And this is just not, in my opinion, a pure exercise of linguistics and vocabulary, because, of course, there are people who say, yes, we need it, and people who say, we don't. But again, what I can see, what I can witness, and I ask this question to my students, is that there is this strong desire from young generation, from young people who are there because they want to have access to texts such as Plato and Aristotle and so on, without being able to translate them, being able to understand nuances. And again, another example for the importance of nuances, with the Odyssey, the adjective that is used at the beginning of the Odyssey is polyutropon. Polyutropon
has been translated very often regarding Odysseus as a smart or strategic. However, in the new translation by Emily Wilson, that Paul Eutropoulou is translated as complicated. Mm. So we're talking about the men, the people, men and women of our own society, complicated, complex. So this alternation of good and bad, as you can see in the movie as well. So yeah. I think that another reason that comes from students as well is that in this world where, you know, AI and social media, fast-paced, we can have everything again done by AI and so on. Ancient Greek kind of forces, in inverted comma, that is the gift, in my opinion, to sit down and think, reflect, because the translation requires time. Which one do I choose? Yeah.
And also that line back to centuries-old thinking. I'm an etymology fan, Gaetana, so I am. This is calling out to me, even though I absolutely have not learned ancient Greek, full disclosure. Daniel in Doreen, you learnt an ancient language at Xavier itself, did you?
I did, Mary, and like the gentleman before, I was French, Latin and ancient Greek, and I was just sharing with the producer that, first of all, even when I studied, they were at one time a prerequisite for medicine and law, because we use so many Latin and Greek words in those two areas. But as a student, I have found it worth, it has helped my English, like the gentleman before. You know, so many words derive from either of those.
You still, that's still sort of pinging in the back of your brain, Daniel?
Well, funnily it does. Not too much of the ancient Greek, but Latin, yes. And French, definitely. I'm heading off to Europe this week, in fact. And,
oh, well done.
If you're a Latin student, there's a scene in Life of Brian where where Brian's daubing the walls of the temple with "Romans go home," but in Latin he writes "Romane ite domum," and the centurions chastise him for his poor Latin grammar, and that's just an absolute classic Latin class right there. It was one of the funniest scenes in the whole movie for me. But
Daniel, I had no idea that Monty Python was digging into this issue as well. I'm going to have to go back and have a look. Thank you. Sam, what do you think? And you're in Williamstown. Hello.
Oh, hello. It's Sam.
Yes, hi. Have you learnt an ancient language?
Well, I don't have an ancient language, but I speak modern Greek. I went to Greek school. And what was fascinating is when I went travelling overseas to Egypt and Turkey and Greece and all these ancient civilizations where the Greeks had conquered, I was able to read what was on transcribed on the pillars of ancient times. And it was phenomenal. And I got goosebumps. And my friends around me were fascinated. They were just so envious that I could do that.
Was that a surprise too? Like you hadn't really, you know, boned up on your Latin before you went?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's a shame. Look, I think university students that want to learn philosophy and all of that will continue to study the language. But, I just wanted to share that because it was quite spectacular that other people thought, wow.
Oh, Sam, I envy that situation to think that you are looking at something that someone has written and you can read it and it's centuries old. I'm getting envious there. On the line still is Gaetana Pellegrini, who's from Melbourne University and who wants ancient Greek to continue in high schools and it is in universities. I'll just ask you to respond to this on text that essentially we should be teaching coding, not ancient languages. You've made a really good case, Gaetana, for the benefits of these. It is reality that there are limited resources. What would you have to say about that practical path for universities versus this no doubt inspiring but somewhat, ancient language?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, we do have a strong interest coming from students, so there is a market there. And this is also showed by an activity that I'm at the moment organizing with Rome, where students from Melbourne University are going to Rome and they're going to learn to speak Latin by speaking Latin.
So there is a strong interest. I also want to point out another thing. So again, there is a market, it's a matter of publicizing. Another important thing referring to the movie. Now, I think the big gift, and I don't want to do any spoilers here because I
know. No, no spoilers. I haven't seen it.
No spoilers.
Can you spoil an ancient text? I'm not sure, but anyway.
Really, the strong message there is that there is a strong desire for stories. Because the Odyssey is a myth. Myth comes from the ancient Greek mythos. Mythos means word. So there's a strong desire for stories. And why is that? Because the ancient learned that by sitting down, you know, we all have the image of sitting down in a circle and telling stories. We do grow. We do learn things about life because there's a sort of catharsis. It's like going to the theater. And another big message there is that through the war of Troy, basically, that destroyed civilization, there was this moment of darkness that started. And again, this is applicable to our society where, again, fast-paced and everything. Mm-hmm. We don't have really the time to sit down and talk. So we do have these important messages for, become a good citizen. Again, I'm referring to ancient Greek, of the polis, of the city, and to learn how to be in society. Again, another important point that comes in the Odyssey is this line between bestiality and what it means to be human. So it's a very universal message, and the market is there. There is a momentum. Let's use that.
Exactly.
That's what I think.
Gaetana, enjoy the zeitgeist that the Odyssey is bringing and the connection to a whole new generation. I'm off to see it soon.
Thank you.
So, yes, I'll be keeping your words in mind. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
That's Gaetana Pellegrini, who's assistant lecturer in classics and archaeology at Melbourne Uni, where ancient Greek is still in demand. In fact, even growing. Keep those texts coming, in particular about ancient Greek, but also call in 1300 222 774 about falls, about preventing falls. We are calling them falls because we're getting to that stage in life. It's about when falling over can become just something more. It can lead to loss of independence. It can lead to a lot of things. How are you preventing it? Did you know that you needed to be preventing it from your 30s? Jump on the line with any questions or observations you have about the falls of your life. That's next on The Conversation Hour.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Well, falls, their importance, their impact is always in our lives. But a really interesting study was published this month in the US saying how a single fall can define how we'll age. It reflects an key inflection point in later life. Now, that can happen no matter what age you are. But of course, we need to prevent this and get better at dealing with this no matter what age we are. 1300 222 774. Tell me about the falls in your life, what you've been doing about it, what you're telling people around you to do to prevent them. Professor Kim Delbert is the discipline lead of physiotherapy at University of New South Wales. Thank you so much for joining me, Kim.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It is very, very common, isn't it? This issue of falling and the impact can be profound.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we say, from the age of 65, it is very common for people to fall. Like we say, about 1 in 3 people fall from the age of 65. It gets even more common from the age of 85, 1 in 2. But yeah, as the article mentioned that you were referring to, it's even earlier that we need to start thinking about it, because our balance starts deteriorating from the age of 40. And it kind of goes by without realizing, because we're still going about all the things that we used to. But then once we hit about 60, 65, if we don't do anything about it, it will start having an effect on our balance in the normal daily activities as well, which is then causing falls. Yeah, very common.
1300 222 774. If you have any stories or questions about falls, Kim Delbar is a professor and who is with me at the moment. We're talking about it. Balance is the first thing that you've mentioned there. What are some really simple things we can be doing that I could be doing right now as I'm talking to you? People who are listening right now can be doing.
Yeah, well, the key thing is the balance exercises is the most important and the most effective strategy that you can do to prevent falls, like from the age of 40. But the most important thing is that it's challenging. So I can give you some exercises, but it will be different for every person, of course.
I guess I'm thinking of the ones like, and I actually do this, Kim, but standing on one leg while I'm doing things or first thing in the morning, I feel it really works for me.
Yeah, well, absolutely. So standing on one leg might be good for you, and you might be able to close your eyes as well, so making it a bit more challenging that way.
I haven't done that yet.
Yeah. Okay. So while you're waiting for the kettle to boil, like maybe give that a try. Mm-hmm. And then for people who are a bit older and maybe are struggling with their balance, it might be standing more with on both of your feet, but maybe in one line, like you would be walking a tightrope type of thing. Mm-hmm. And that might already be challenging enough to do that, and or even standing normally and closing your eyes while you're being able, while you're close to something so that you can hold on. So, but there's multiple challenges like that that you can do to challenge your balance, yeah.
And I think it was Mel, our caller, said, and I agree with her, that when I've started to work on this, the improvement can come really quickly, can't it?
Yeah, so the effect on your balance, like you will start feeling that within a matter of weeks, really. But then like the most important thing is like not to stop at that point, because it takes about 6 months to really have that effect on falls as well, so that it becomes translatable like to other activities in daily life, because otherwise you just become good at standing on one leg.
Which, you know, is a skill. But yes, you should just expand that skill. In Wodonga, you've had a couple of recent falls, is that right?
Yeah, I had a bit of an interest in this because my mother had two damaging falls and broke lots of bones. Mm. I have light bone structure, so I started studying this and had two big falls myself, and apart from some skin damage and a little bit of muscle damage, bones were good. And I really got stuck into understanding that my feet were too weak from being in shoes all the time.
Oh.
So I started stimulating the bottom of the feet with walking barefoot, running barefoot, doing lots of foot exercises to link up into my hips and pelvis. And since then, I've stumbled quite a few times and recovered just wonderfully.
Oh, Kath, that's such a wonderful story and inspiring. Kim, That's such a great tip, isn't it? It's about foot and ankle, I guess, not just the bones or what you're born with.
Yeah, well, that's right. And, you know, like different things work for different people. But like what I'm expecting as well that happened while you were doing those barefoot exercises, that you're actually really challenging your balance. So it won't be for everyone, because feet can be quite sore as we age as well. So it's not something that we necessarily would recommend for everyone. But there has been a study a little while ago where they actually recommended people to go to a podiatrist. And that was also something that was able to prevent falls for some people. And it was actually specifically foot exercises that as part of that therapy were preventable. But it's like it again comes down to exercise, doesn't it? And making sure that you challenge that balance, yeah.
You're with The Conversation Hour and we're talking about falls. Jill in Caulfield, what did you want to add? Hi, Jill.
Hello. I'm very much into preventing falls. I actually fell this time last year and broke my wrist.
Oh.
But that's okay. It's all good now.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do now, I do go to aqua pilates 3 times a week. And one session in particular is all about balance with weights in the water on one foot, on the other foot and all that sort of thing. I'm also doing activate functional strength twice a week.
Yeah. That's about wrists and things like that as well?
It's all about using the wrist and the legs and one leg and the other leg. I'm 79, so I know I need to keep doing this.
Has it changed how you do things and it changed the ease of your life, Jill?
Yeah, I'm more careful. When I fell, I was at Caulfield Park with my dog. Couldn't blame the dog because he was off leash. And I don't know, 1 minute I was standing up, the next minute I'd fallen, you know.
Oh, Jill.
So now I'm much more aware of how I walk and, yeah.
Jill, that sounds like you're really attacking it well. So much has to do with, I guess, also being able to see and to remember to look where we're going, Kim.
Yeah, well, so I just want to like pick up on what Jill was saying with all the classes that she's doing, because it's something that I haven't really mentioned. Like, we say you need to keep it up for a long time, but what we also say is that it needs to be about 2 hours a week. So it's not just about standing on one leg like once in a while, but being able to go to classes, like 1 hour classes like Jill is doing, and things like Pilates and Tai Chi as well is very good for your balance. So any type of those exercises where you feel a bit wobbly on your feet, they're the ones to do for about 2 hours a week.
I saw on text, yoga in capital letters. Obviously,
Well, it depends on the type of yoga. Like, there's been a study actually that showed that it didn't quite work, but it's mostly about, it's about challenging the balance. So, you know, with different types of yoga, like, it's not always, it can be quite relaxing, like very good for our mental health. There's also like chair yoga as well. But those things have not been, you know, effective at preventing falls, that they're still good for you. Like, I wouldn't say not to do them. But the main thing is to make sure that you've challenged your balance. Like, feeling wobbly on your feet is the main thing that we need to get to prevent falls. Mm.
And I guess just to finish, Kim, I mean, there's lots of talk also about having bifocals in inappropriate places. Yeah. It's about awareness overall, isn't it, of preventing not seeing things properly, not being in the right circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah, so I feel like I'm just rattling off like studies from the past. But so this is also something that we had a look at, that actually wearing bifocals can increase the risk of falling. And if you're walking out at about, it's actually better to wear like single lens glasses. And it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? If you think about it, like when you look through the bottom bit, which is where the cracks in the pavement might be, right?
I give myself scares all the time.
Yeah. It looks a bit blurry. So, and that kind of comes down to making sure that we avoid hazards in our home as well, like making sure that that our home is safe, because most of the falls actually happen in people's homes. So you've got a lot of control on that yourself. And then, the other thing is to have a regular health check with
always your doctor. Have a health check and always talk about it with your GP. Professor Kim Delbar, thank you for joining us today.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Kim is from University of New South Wales. I'm seeing a lot of texts, seeing a lot of people cleaning their teeth on one leg. And Jeff says, fell in love 50 years ago, never recovered. Thank you so much for joining me in the Conversation Hour.